Welcome back, as the IFC presents another episode of the Archetypes of Destiny. My name is James Malamis. We've got a great episode for you. Today we continue with our new series, The Four Archetypes. We will discuss the resolution of the glitch, Part 5. It's a great discussion, we can't wait for you to hear it. If you enjoy the IFC's The Four Archetypes and want to support, make sure to rate the podcast 5 stars on iTunes and wherever you get your podcast. So without any further ado, Dr. Al Samurai, take it away.
Welcome back to another episode of The Four Archetypes. I am Dr. Lahab Al Samurai, and with me today, we have The Four Archetypes here today. So Dr. Lisa Hong is with us today. Whitman Davis, Mr. Davis Whitman is with us today. And Eric Tomlinson is with us today. Dr. Eric, how you doing? Whit, how you doing?
Good.
Lisa, what's going on?
Good.
Hi. Pretty good.
Okay. So we are back. Today will be, we are going to wrap up Jamp and the resolution of the glitch. We'll be going through the last couple of chapters, and then we return to a very dear friend that we finished 2 volumes with, and we thought we'd take you on the 3rd volume of her collected works, Mary Louise von Franz, in the heroine's journey. So that will be hopefully next week or in 2 weeks, but this week we are going to go to chapter 11 through 14, and we're gonna try to summarize, conceptualize, and maybe ask some questions about some things in the book. All right. Before I start, anybody want to say anything, comment, thought, idea? Dr. Eric?
I'm glad we have the Four Musketeers here.
It's the Four Archetypes, Dr. Eric.
I know.
Insult the archetypes, man.
No, it's not an insult. I'm French.
Nobody listens, man.
Wait a minute. I'm French, and the Four Musketeers were the 4 most gallant warriors that country has ever seen.
But actually, they are the Four Archetypes.
Thank you.
The Four Musketeers, as Dr. Eric said, are the 4. So we have the lover.
We have
the warrior. We have the magician, and then we have their king.
So I would love for everybody on their own, if you're familiar with the Four Musketeers, try to match us up.
Yeah.
What do you think?
They have all the 4 archetypes within the Musketeers, right? They're not all warriors. There's only 1 warrior among them. Mm-hmm. They're all skilled in the art of war, but they're different archetypes.
Is that official?
D'Artagnan was the warrior.
D'Artagnan was the warrior, correct.
Yes. And if you have never seen that movie, it was made in the 70s, called The Four Musketeers. It's got Raquel Welch in it. It's just a fabulous TV show.
There's a couple of, there's not a couple of remakes. There's quite a few remakes of the Musketeers, right? There's the 3 Musketeers, and then they adopt the 4th one, and then there's the 4 Musketeers. Yeah. So,
and then there's a newer one that was only done like in the last 10, 15 years. I forgot whether it's on Netflix or Hulu, but it was superbly done, by the way.
Yes. It was originally done for TNT.
It was really well done.
Yeah. Yeah. When Turner was still in charge of that group, they did one for TNT. What? How are you doing today, man?
I just had somebody come to the door and soliciting of some kind, and I put myself on mute and I told them something very loudly. I was polite,
okay,
enough, but yeah.
That's few and far between nowadays.
Life of filming and broadcasting at home. People pop up.
Because they saw me through the window, but they're like,
I'm working. What? Usually I have barking dogs outside, you know. I usually have like sound system that turns on, which what's funny is not, you can't hear, the microphone doesn't pick it up, but the but I could hear it, and it's very loud to me. So I'm thinking, oh, all this noise is going to be a terrible podcast because it's going to pick up all this different noises, but it usually doesn't. So
what's interesting, Whitman, is that whenever I visit Dr. LaHob, he has me stand outside on his porch, and he turns me into a barking dog.
All right, let's get back to trauma. Thank you, Dr. Eric.
On that note.
Thank you for the transition, Dr. Eric.
And that's not trauma.
Let's get back to treating trauma.
That's not trauma.
We're getting into the treatment.
I think our respondents realize that that was something said out of love.
Our audience
knows that that was said out of love and admiration.
Okay. What I said last week was I said we have people who see us on YouTube. So if you're calling them listeners, you're talking to our podcast people. We have two different groups. That's what I was saying. So we have the visual seers, and then we have the audio listeners. So we have both.
It's like, yo, I'm an OG. I'm trying to grow out of it. You know what I'm saying? You feel me? You feel me, bro?
I'm feeling you today, bro.
All right.
Why don't we, Dr. Eric, you said you had an idea about chapter 11.
I thought what you and Dr. Lisa talked about last week when we were going over the holding pattern.
Yeah.
And I even commented a practical point about it related to how I have been held within that holding pattern myself. But I love what you and Christy say on page 125 at the top of the page. And you say, you state, and I quote, it is one that will either result in a complete rebirth or a holding pattern. It's talking about this, what the trauma affects. They either result in a holding pattern, which I practically described my own experiences regarding, but we never really got into how those same trauma effects can result in a complete rebirth. And I thought that was an amazing statement. So I'm offering that up for many statements and declarations on your parts.
So two things happen. One is that when we talk about in a complete rebirth or a holding pattern, what results is that something that grows out of the trauma is a rebirth, and the rest is the holding pattern. So it's an arrested holding pattern. It's an arrested rebirth. It's dead on arrival. The rebirth is not quite transformative, because the pattern is, so what happens is that during the treatment, the rebirth is actually liberated. The rebirth is transformative because the holding pattern is broken up. The holding pattern is what holds the rebirth back.
Whoa, great statement. May I ask you a question, Dr. Elson?
Yeah, go for it.
What do we do? What are we capable of doing personally to break that holding pattern and get into the rebirth cycle that you're referring to?
Well, treatment is always, should be the path, because it is the fastest path, and it's because it's a tried and tested path. So I would recommend treatment. I would recommend Jungian advanced motor processing, as we do in the book, but the treatment is to get you reconnected with yourself first. So what happens is that when we're thinking about trauma, we're also thinking that that we suffer from, we're basically held in something that we can't move out of. And what happens is that our imagination becomes limited. We cannot imagine a way out. We can only imagine being caught in the struggle. And so a lot of people who suffer from trauma can't move forward because they can't imagine themselves feeling better, doing something different, seeing themselves in the world in a different place and a different time, freed up from their own symptoms, their own holding patterns. So if you want to think about holding patterns, think about symptoms, think about triggers, think about what we describe as something that I cannot do. Every time we use the term, I cannot do that, we're basically talking about a holding pattern. We're talking about something that I'm caught in, either physically, psychologically, emotionally. That's a holding pattern. The holding pattern is basically you're stuck. It holds you in the same place. And what the trauma does is when the trauma, at the epicenter of the trauma, there is the initial consciousness that something is happening. That initial consciousness causes the holding pattern. That's the beginning.
Yeah, I think a lot of holding patterns express themselves in a lot of different ways for people that still have you in a holding pattern. Another type of holding pattern can be, oh, I'll deal with that. There it is again. Oh, I can handle this. That's a holding pattern.
I'll get through.
Mm-hmm. I know what to do. I know how to take care of myself. You might sound healthy, but it's still a holding pattern. You know?
You can't tell me about this. I know this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
May I give a funny story for our audience?
Yes. Now that you're calling them your audience. Yes.
Our audience.
I don't know why you wanted to call them before, but now that you're calling them your audience, yes.
Absolutely. Our audience.
Okay, our audience. Okay.
Back me up on that one. Come on,
okay,
Whitman.
Okay, I'll back you up. All right.
You know, I'm talking to Whitman. Back me up. I said our audience.
Make your point.
Okay, my point is this, and Lisa's smiling, which is always wonderful because she's just a bucket of little baby kitties. All right, my point is this, is that what you described is exactly what I went through. When you said, I asked you the question and you said, you need treatment, we need treatment, we need JAMP. And that's what I submitted myself to. And as a result, that got freed up in me with the JAMP that I experienced and the ongoing consultation that I received from both you and Dr. Lisa. And it freed me up from that element or from that aspect of being held in a holding pattern. It released me from the holding pattern that I was in. Now, I will be honest, and Dr. Lahab and Dr. Lisa will clearly understand and support this point. And that is, once I was freed up from that holding pattern, it then revealed other dynamics that needed to be jammed, and that those, the two of them, have continuously helped me to understand by pointing it out when it would come out of my mouth. So I suggest to our audience, this is not a one-time ending matter. This is something that, depending on what you have experienced and gone through in your past, may consist of different levels of not different, ongoing levels of JAMP treatment.
Yeah, so the holding pattern sets up a whole dynamic of different things. Thank you, Dr. Eric.
You're welcome.
The holding pattern creates a whole different separation. It separates you from the world you exist in. And so once the diet, once those, that pattern is broken up, the vibrations of the treatment, feeling better, being able to have your feelings without them burning you up, overwhelming you, crushing you, oppressing you, being able to have your feelings and moving forward will start to create, you will start to, what Dr. Eric is talking about, you'll start to see that you've created your own holding patterns because of the initial trauma. And so you blocked yourself off eventually from everything around you because of what the trauma causes, right? Mm-hmm. The feeling state, the irritation, the flashbacks, the mood swings, the hypervigilance, the ambivalence, the anxiety, the irritation, just to name a few. What, you have a thought you want to share?
What people are conscious of and unconscious of as far as the holding, you know, patterns are concerned, you know, I think that's something that maybe might need a little bit or could help to have some clarification.
Ooh.
You know, is there denial? Is there something that's a, you know, a faux, kind of remedy or something that we think of, you know, that's Ooh. Genuine, you know, to us, or isn't it, yeah, just kind of along those lines, if it may not be too clear, but,
So a holding pattern would be, I was traumatized by visiting a different neighborhood. I was traumatized in a different neighborhood. Now I can't visit any neighborhood. I can't leave mine. So my holding pattern becomes a physical, psychological manifestation of where I feel safe, but where I can't leave. It becomes what we refer to as a psychic prison.
Right.
So the holding pattern becomes is I can't really leave this neighborhood because I'm safe here. And if I leave, I get attacked. And therefore, I can't apply for a job because I need it to be in my neighborhood. So I have to find a job to do that fits within my geographic location. Food. Well, yeah, I'd like to try that restaurant, but it's too far away from me. I'm just going to stick with whatever is around here.
Okay, so that's conscious. That's highly, so, you know.
Well, it is conscious, but it's not.
Thank you.
The conscious part is that I am aware of what I'm doing, but I am not aware of why I'm doing it. I could state it to you. I could say I am afraid
what if
something would happen to me. But that thing, if you ask, what is that thing that will happen to you? That will be very complicated for me to answer.
Right.
I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Whitman, may I give you a more interpersonal relationship response to that question? Because it was a very good question that you asked. Oh, I didn't hear you.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay.
No, go ahead. I just had a little background noise.
And let's say I'm a trauma victim, but I have gotten to the point where I've got a good steady job. I'm well known in my community. I've got good external relationships all around me. I might even be on committees and boards. Who knows? But when it comes to interpersonal relationships, when someone says something to me that is just in and of itself contained within its own element of interaction, I hear it and take it as some kind of personal attack. I view it as something that is attacking me and hurting me, and so I put up my defenses. Or I'm in a personal relationship with someone and they say something that is normal, that is typical of what any person would say in a normal relationship, or a typical relationship, I'd rather say. And then I take it as something personal. It's an attack on me, and my defenses go up immediately. That's what trauma does at a level that doesn't seem to be obvious to most people. And that's the effects that it has, and the reaction that it has, when it's really not about the person, but our level of response is at a 1 to 10 scale higher than what the action actually committed. The action committed maybe wasn't a good one. It was maybe at a 3 or a 4, but our response is at an 8 or a 9.
So I think, Dr. Eric, to think about it in a broader term, our internal system basically sets off the alarms when people start to try to connect with us in an emotional or psychological way, because we have been shut off to protect ourselves from any kind of interaction that could potentially trigger us.
Nice summary, Dr. Lahav.
Reacting. So
nice summary.
I think that's what Dr. Eric was getting to.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so what we see is that people become more one-sided.
Yes.
They're less flexible. They're more resistant to change or different ideas or different ways of thinking about an idea. Their imagination of what is possible is damaged.
Their resiliency is handcuffed.
Well, there can be no resiliency without the idea that I have it within me. You need the idea. And what happens with trauma is that you run out of ideas. And when you're emotionally and psychologically irritated all the time, you run out of ideas. You literally cannot think your way out of a box, because it's like, I'm exhausted, I'm tired, I don't want to think about it. It's because I can't really. I mean, even if you ask me to think about it, I can't figure it out. Because at that point, my ability to reflect is gone.
Does that help, Whitman?
It does.
Good.
It does. I'm thinking about a few other things as you say this, but no, I want to keep moving forward with where you'd like to go next. Let me just say one thing.
Go.
There's defensiveness.
Yes.
Someone says you're being defensive.
Defensive means,
and it's been used in the examples that we've provided.
Yeah,
but it's kind of interesting because I'm thinking also about the workplace. Thinking about people and work culture. So if you're working in a company or a team, and people are constantly having to defend the work that they did, the position that they had, it's all position based. It's all, you know, well, this is why I did this, and this is how I did this or that. And you know, you'll know these environments if you've worked in them. They're
I think all environments give that feeling state of, what do you know? Mm-hmm.
How much do you know?
And that's a complicated question, right? Because you're People interpret that in 10,000 different ways.
Right.
Like, are you calling me stupid? Do you think I don't know what I'm doing? Why did
not even specifically that question, yeah. But it's the presence of that kind of attitude.
Well, yeah. So you that's know, why it that, makes it.
It's the vibe. You can sense it. People are intelligent.
Yeah.
They know what's going on. You know, there's wording, you know, you have to justify why you did something, but
yeah.
Is that coming? Do you think people can get, so let's get strange for a second.
Can I ask you a question about that work environment with, about having that feeling in that work environment? What does that create in the community? What does that feel like?
Wait, sorry, you're asking me.
Sorry, when people are constantly defending themselves and presenting information, defending their stance or how they got there, justifying
right.
their methodology,
exactly.
What happens to the group thinking?
Well, it's all about me. Mm. And it excludes we.
Well, I'm sort of speaking hypothetically. Mm. I'm not, I mean, hypothetically, having observed certain things,
yeah,
nothing super specific right now. But I think, like, what I've, creativity and
imagination,
are definitely lost.
Absolutely.
And you see it affect people. I mean, I'll say now that I believe, you know, in a couple of these circumstances are like, you see that it's zapping life out of the very kind of like,
yes,
the that environment.
Yes. I mean,
and pretty soon people are like kind of walking around like, I don't know what to do because everything is, you know.
Well, trauma, I mean, trauma has
basically
in the United States, 1 in 3 people have witnessed or been a part of a trauma. 1 in 3. These are the statistics.
I thought it would be, I find that low.
3 out of 4.
It's all relative.
Yeah.
Right.
So if you think about it, what you're saying is that, you know, what you're dealing with is traumatized populations. So when you are in those spaces, hypothetically, you're reacting to your own trauma when somebody starts questioning you. They're reacting to their trauma while they're questioning you. At the same time, they're feeling like a need to defend themselves. So the dynamic that it sets up is exactly like you said. It's weird. It sets up this very strange kind of interaction. It almost feels like people are attacking each other just for the hell of it. Mm-hmm. But something is off. And what I've noticed is that I used to think it's because I worked in places that dealt with vulnerable populations, people who've been through trauma. But what I realized is that the people who are in charge of treating all these traumatized people are traumatized ourselves.
Yes.
And so if we don't have treatment, it becomes very complicated to treat people who need treatment. Because
in some ways,
like I said, imagination.
Yeah.
You know?
That's heavy. I'd say that's heavy.
We used to work in the residential arena. The residential arena would have basically residents for children who were wards of the state, who were not in adoption. They're not safe enough to be in adopted homes. People around them are not safe. to have them in adopted homes. So they were basically limbo.
Yeah.
And the state only held you. You could always ask for emancipation from the state at 18. The state will only take care of you until you're 21, I think. In Illinois.
Yes.
In different states is different. Different age range. But anywhere between 23, 21, 25, they let you loose.
May I make a statement, Dr. Lahab, to this?
Yeah, absolutely. But I just, I just wanted to.
Oh, please finish. And then
talk about the core of the issue. The core of the issue is.
Yeah, please finish, sir. Sorry.
That's okay. The core of it is trauma. The core of what these kids suffer is trauma. It's never dealt with. It's never treated. It's never worked out. We used to be in this field and it was very difficult. We didn't have the tools that we have now. We didn't have the understanding of the brain as we do now, as I do.
Very
now.
True.
I speak of myself as I do now.
And myself included.
But what we had is we have people who are stuck. They are ultimately in a life of a holding pattern. And that holding pattern is passed on to the next generation because we used to see them have children. It's like, well, you know, my life was really screwed up. I'm going to have a kid and we're going to have a great life. They're going to love me.
And that's another stuck statement too, which comes to that. You're just like your dad.
Yes.
Or you're just like your mom. Or I'm my dad's kid.
Yes,
or
I'm just like your dad.
That's another kind of pattern where you hold yourself that may not necessarily be true.
Well, it's not. You are not.
No.
You are anything but your parents. You are actually, you are a separate human being with separate experiences, with a separate life, with a separate existence, with a separate imagination, with a separate psyche. At the same time, yes, you imprint because they imprint on you. You're a child. And they teach you how to do things. So the imprint is from the parent. So if they tell you, you walk on the sidewalk. Oh, we don't walk in the street. We walk on the sidewalk. Why do we walk? Because that's what mom says. She says, walk on the sidewalk. Okay, so that is basically they've imprinted on you. You know, like the little ducklings that follow the mother duck. That's the imprint. It's like, oh, okay, we go this way, we eat here, we fly here, we're safe there, we don't touch that. So,
may I make a statement, Dr. Lahab?
Sure.
The term is synergy or synergistic.
Okay.
Which means that you take the combination of two or more things and you produce something greater than what those aspects created.
Okay.
And what you're talking about is that we are all synergistic from our parents. We've taken what we've inhaled from them genetically and emotionally and environmentally, and we've created something greater and bigger than what they were. That's what synergy is all about.
Okay.
And I did want to say something to you that was complimentary. May I compliment you, Dr. Law?
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime.
Okay, Dr. because sometimes
I can't live without your compliments. Please.
Well, sometimes I know you want to slap me, but this compliment you.
There is no violence on this podcast.
Well, Whitman
and
said
you're in Florida, so violence is
I asked Whitman ahead of time and he said I could say this. So thank you, Whitman.
Okay. All right.
Okay. When you and I were...
I don't remember him saying anything, but
go ahead. That was a joke, Whitman.
Yeah. Oh, I got your joke, but go ahead.
I love Whitman. I'm becoming... Okay. Come on.
Okay.
But when you and I worked with the population that you spoke about...
Yes.
...that I had worked with for 20 years before you came into my equation...
Yes.
...and you provided something that I had not seen before... which made me and even a greater response in ingratiate myself into your treatment sessions, group treatment sessions with a variety of sex offenders. And what I saw you do is to be able to understand their psychological, emotional dynamics that they had gone through for years and years and years, that 10 years of my previous therapists that I had hired and worked with in groups were not able to do. They were not able to accomplish because they were more textbook oriented, if I may say. And yet you allowed the feeling states of these kids, and they were kids, to express themselves in a way that enabled you and at times myself to be able to gain access to their emotional and developmental creation. And because of that, we were able to identify with and understand what they had experienced and felt through their years and years of abuse.
Yeah, so
I wanted to thank you for that.
Thank you.
And recognize the fact that this enables us to presently push forward and understand the dynamics of abuse in adults.
Yeah, so let's go back to our population. That population was extremely traumatized. So yes, they were sexually, emotionally aggressive, but they were severely traumatized children.
On the worst level that we can notice. Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you. Dr. Lisa, you had a thought. Or did Dr. Eric kind of confuse your thought?
I hope I didn't.
Sure did. I get lots more.
All right. When you get another one. So today we threw ourselves into the idea of the being disconnected from our ability to see our way out of the dilemma that is the traumatic event. Because what happens is, this is why we call it a glitch. It's a glitch in the patterns that we create. It becomes a constant irritant. It always pulls us back into the same place. It always drags us back into the same corner. It always tells me the same story. It always makes me feel the same way. It always keeps me from doing things that I would like to do, but it's telling me that I really can't do. And what are those things? It could be anything from not getting back into a car and driving because I was in a car accident. It could be not hiking again because I fell and broke my leg. It could be not going swimming because I almost drowned. It could be I had a really terrible relationship and they were violent and I can't have another relationship. It could be anything of those things that keep us from doing the things that naturally, as human beings, as a human organism on this beautiful planet, keeps us from doing, holds us back. A holding pattern, you know, if you've ever been on a flight, I think we've all experienced this, and the plane just keeps circling overhead. And you ask, and the captain comes on. He's like, well, we're in a holding pattern, folks, until they give us clearance to land. So in a way, we have that internal holding pattern. We're waiting to land. We're waiting to disembark. We're waiting to move on.
Which in our psyche is affiliated with purgatory.
Ooh.
We don't want to be in purgatory.
Yes.
The holding pattern is not a healthy pattern.
Yes.
It does not allow us to move forward.
Yes.
Living in that holding pattern holds us back.
Yes.
We need to get out of these holding patterns.
Yes. So the Jungians, would call it limbo.
Yeah.
And limbo is the place between life and death.
Mm-hmm.
Where are you? I'm in limbo.
No creation can be made in that limbo state.
So rebirth is basically held in that mm-hmm. holding pattern. The rebirth is being held.
Mm-hmm.
Your rebirth is within the pain. When we say that, people think, well, you know, do I have to experience a lot of pain to feel better? Well, not exactly. Yes, there is pain in feeling better, but it's not exactly what you think. It's not pain you haven't experienced. It's not pain that you're not going through. It's the same pain you already have. You're just going to have to see it in a different light. You're going to have to experience that pain in a different way. You're going to have to understand it, absorb it in a much different way. And once you're able to, and that's why we use Jungian advanced motor processing, when you are able to integrate those things, then you're able to let go of the pain. The pain is there because you cannot feel those feelings. You can't have those shards of emotions that have been disassociated because of fear, because of trauma, because of anger, because of loss, reintegrated. So you could feel whole, so you could move forward, so you could get out of purgatory, Dr. Lisa.
I'm going to ask you a question about that.
Yeah.
It's in my mind.
Yeah.
Visual. So I'm imagining myself like going through this exhilarating change. I don't understand what's going on around me. Everything's very different.
Ooh.
I'm kind of just following my gut and intuition. I'm not even sure I can handle it. But
well,
I think
I can
do one day at a time. I can do one day at a time. So I do one day at a time, 1 minute, 1 hour, conversation at a time. And after a while, I'm like, no, actually, I can stretch my legs. I can actually walk. I can actually run. I think I can run. I can run. I can run in this space and I think I'll be okay and I can handle it. And I can deal with the blind spots around the corner, no problem. And then I get to those moments of like, ow, what's on my foot? Ow, ow.
Mm-hmm.
And this is like the original, one of the original traumas that we've discovered in our process. And I look at it, stick it on my foot and I go, that thorn? Oh man, that's, I don't need that anymore.
Yeah.
And I move on. Is that, is that oversimplified or does it kind of work that way?
I love that. That's amazing. I love that. Yes, absolutely. Because once you're able to say that you had the wherewithal to stop, mm-hmm. that requires treatment, right? Because otherwise we keep walking on the pain.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm always in pain. I'm always in pain. I'm always stomping the same pain. So you're always stepping on that thorn. I'm always in pain. You said, hey, wait. Yeah, I know you're always in pain. Okay. Hold on a second. Just look at your bottom of your foot. What? No, take a look. Seriously, take a look. Oh, can you take that off? Oh, this thing, I don't know. Is it part of my foot? No, you don't need it. Get it off. Give it to me. Let me take it off your hands. Okay, go.
Yeah, so is it really that at some point you go, oh, I remember that pain. That really sucked. That did happen, but I don't need it anymore. And it's like, is that kind of?
Yeah, because we don't need it. That's only when you're traumatized do you think the pain gives you character. This is the trauma speaking. The trauma saying,
this is my limp.
Yeah.
My limp. This is my bad limp.
But, and it gives you character. Mm. You wouldn't look as sexy as you do without that limp. You need the limp. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so I need the pain. I need the trauma. Mm. I wouldn't be the person I am without what I experienced. What the hell is that? That's not a good way of thinking about the world. because we are freer of the experience the more we can think of ourselves not being tormented. If we think the torment is an achievement, then what we will have is torment. We will continue to seek out torment because that is the achievement. The achievement is pain. With that, we will be back. This is the four archetypes. And as we leave you, we always say, we are not afraid.
We are not afraid.
We are not afraid.
I am not afraid. Whit, do you want to join us with this?
Yeah.
We do this affirmation. We do one affirmation. The affirmation of I am not afraid.
On mute. Yeah.
Go for it.
We are not afraid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we love saying that affirmation because that affirmation is the true path to our transformation. We cannot be afraid. We have to move forward. We will see you next week. Have a great week.
Thank you for tuning into part 5 of The Resolution of the Glitch. We hope you enjoyed hearing from Dr. Al-Samari, Dr. Eric Tomlinson, Dr. Lisa Hong, and Whitman Davis. You can also find us on the IFC's YouTube. Make sure to check out the JAMP Institute for Training's Magician's Call podcast as well. The IFC is a not-for-profit institution. We do not have any paid advertising for our podcast, but we do accept donations. All donations and contributions are tax-deductible. You can find more info at theinstituteforconflict.com.